Oh no, it's podcast time.
Oh no, it's podcast time. This is the podcast, Yo, Is This Racist? Where we listen to your voicemail questions about racism with the help of a special guest or guests. I'm Tawny Newsome, that's Andrew T. And this time we do have a very special guest.
We're calling the return of Cody Ziegler a very special guest.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, man.
Disagree.
Come on.
Disagree.
The prodigal son returns. Thank you for uplifting me, Tawny. I'm glad that you're excited to see me, unlike Andrew.
You're welcome. Former producer, current friend, future boss?
Enemy.
Yeah.
Future enemy of Andrew T.
Every current former producer enemy. Is it. Every former producer is an eventual enemy.
That is how that works. That is the tree of life.
Yeah.
Get ready, Kevin.
Okay.
You're gonna be an enemy, maybe. Probably not, actually.
Hey, you're we'll a sweet see. Boy.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Also, the listeners to the Yo, Is This Racist Suboptimal Bundle. see, this is why you gotta, if you want the backstory to why me and Zig are enemies now, you have to get the extra content to see the utter bullshit he's been putting me through.
Hey, people love it, man. From your text directly say that people enjoy when I come through and give my little nerd flavoring. So you're welcome.
I think people like my misery.
Yeah. It's a good 1-2 punch of yay, we miss Zig, and also we like when Andrew's unhappy. And so if you want that dose of cruelty, you can get it at suboptimalpods.com by subscribing to the bundle where we have all kinds of limited series pods. Including the one with Zig and Andrew, where Zig forces Andrew to watch anime.
It really is the best of both worlds. I really couldn't ask for a more fun project.
Oh, it's so miserable. So wildly miserable. Do we start with news? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think just quickly, as the news cycle works so fast, I feel like every week we put out an episode, we have to say, this was recorded before this terrible thing happened. So we had recorded before the Derek Chauvin verdict. He was found guilty on 3 counts, manslaughter. My official response on this is fine.
Yeah,
let's keep going. Let's keep doing this. This doesn't fix anything. This is the bare minimum and took like an entire nation, if not the world, screaming for this type of result for months and months.
Yeah.
So it'd be great if justice just happened without that much public outcry.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as we see, like, it's those very cops were flying a Blue Lives Matter flag. Like, you know,
one of them said our entire way of policing is under attack. And we're like,
that's
the point.
Yeah.
Fix it.
Your entire way of policing is racist.
Is whack and wrong. And you learned it bad. So it's time to do it over.
Anything about it.
Really, it's just like a drop in the bucket, you know? It really, like, it's a mixture of like a drop in the bucket, then also keep that same energy, which I, as someone who's been in this country for 33 years, I feel like that energy is definitely not going to be kept unless.
Yeah.
A lot of people make them do it.
That's it. It's like, you know, to the extent that you can do anything, like, I guess it's like, look at yourself. Cause if you are like pacified by this happening, that's maybe the wrong way to look at it. It's like, take the small victories when you can, but know that, you know, again, this isn't even a victory. This is like a little tiny kernel of a type of justice, but like,
this should just be par for the course when this happens.
Yeah.
The shooting should be so few and far between that when they do happen, it's so immediately obvious that it's a crime, the end. As the verdict was being announced, another young woman, a 15-year-old child, was killed by a cop in Columbus, Ohio, Micaiah Bryant. There were people fighting outside of her house, and she called the cops to protect her, ran out to defend herself, and the cop who arrived on the scene shot and killed her. Mm-hmm. So, any victory that anyone felt or any relief was short-lived.
Yeah. Again, this is the time, right? Like, everything, not this is the time as in this is the only time, but this is like the type of time when like you actually show who you are, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's easy to say Black Lives Matter when it's like everyone has energy and it's a social movement and it's very clear. And this is actually the time when like, when your energy is flagging, when like you seem tired, when it seems hopeless, like This is like actually when your energy like is needed the most. And so I don't know, do what you fucking can, people, and then do like 10% more.
Yeah, I think when you feel the most tired is when you really need to tap into your empathy and be like, this is not something that's going to be done overnight. It's a continual fight that's going to be lasting for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there are plenty of abolitionist groups that have been calling for not only police reform, but complete overhaul of the institution of policing for years and years before, you know, these hashtags got trendy. So look for them and follow them and, you know, look to hope from them, because they've been thinking about it for decades and some of us just got here.
Right. Like, it's not only fine, it's good to look to the people that know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not us. Not us, by the way.
Not us. We're taking a walk. We are the taking a walk on the health and wellness of your anti-racism journey analogy.
Yeah, we're taking our smoke break, so hit us in 30.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't have a whole lot to say about either of those cases. It's very depressing. I was trying to protect some of my mental health by like shutting down any comments that on any of my posts. But then my dumbass goes and sees that, you know, my friends or my castmates have posted things and they have idiots in their comments. I forget that because I am like a Black woman, I feel like most people, I don't get any followers, or at least they know to shut up, that don't agree on most of these things. I don't get people in the comments being like, well, they should have just complied with all, like, that doesn't happen to me rarely. It's so rare. So when I see like my white castmates, like my Space Force castmate, Diana Silvers, you know, she's like 23. She's incredibly outspoken about all things abolition. And, you know, she's very like, she's way more informed than I was at 23. But she still has like 40-year-old white dudes who follow her because they think she's hot or whatever, or they saw her in a movie or something, who are arguing with her posts in the comments. And I'm just, it makes it clear to me that like, if you have a following of any sort, I know that social media seems like nothing, like just posting, you know, Black Lives Matter or posting, you know, Stop Asian Hate or whatever seems like such a, it seems like it's not doing anything, but what it's doing at the very least is telling your followers, especially if you're white and if you're famous at all, just not to bring that shit here. Yeah. And that's the bare minimum that you can do. That's the least you can do. And so when I see friends and castmates who don't at least do that, I mean, you know, it tells me that they can't even be bothered to tell their fan base where they stand on these issues.
Yeah, it's just, it's the bare minimum of drawing a line in the digital sand and saying, this is the line that you're not going to cross. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the Black Squares thing. We've talked about this. It's just like, it's necessary, but not sufficient. Right.
Right.
Like, if you didn't do it or some version of more than that, it's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Then you're okay with those people in your followers that, you know, want to maybe think that you don't believe in this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Or want to silence that type of talk. I mean, that's the like stick to sports, stick to politics version of it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I probably like Black athletes have it certainly the most interesting, because like, I feel like sports is the place that like racists have the most like what seems like it ought to be conflicting, but isn't, because they just see themselves as having ownership over these athletes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, how could you like a Black athlete if you're a racist? It's like, because could you look at it in a different way than being a fan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's always interesting seeing how hard they come out for LeBron James when he says even the smallest thing, like don't kill Black people, or I'm going to open up this school to help the youth of this city that I grew up in. Just seeing the entitlement that flows out of like white sports fans being like, no, we want you to shut up and dribble the ball so we can drink our beer and eat our chicken wings and then not talk about being a Black person in the United States.
Yeah.
That's all that we want.
Wait a minute. Yeah. I want to do all those things at once.
I know, right?
Man, you said beer and chicken wings and I feel like my brain just opened up. I was like, that's all I want right now. And I want to talk about Blackness while doing it.
I mean, it's an option.
You're right. What am I doing here?
Yeah. Let's do it, Tony.
I haven't been drinking. Maybe I need to break that streak. Maybe things will be easier in my life if I break that streak. Will, we should pivot to talking about what Zig is here to talk about. We're celebrating young baby Zig's very first graphic novel.
Yes.
Tell us everything about it, because I don't know how to ask questions about it.
As you know, like I wrote for She-Hulk, and there's a really nice white man, and the room named Zeb Wells. I stand a white king. He's one of the few white people that I vouch for. So, like, you know, he's a good one. And he let me check a little box off my nerd list of writing for Marvel. So, like, I wrote a one shot, which is like a short story, 30 pages in and out, called okay. Siege Society number one for Marvel, and that's coming out May 26th. And you all were lucky enough to let me have on to shill this to the audience and to the listeners, and I thank you for it.
Of course.
I mean, don't thank us yet, because I don't know how many of these people are buying a goddamn comic book.
No, they're going to buy it, because we're going to...
Siege Society, issue one.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. So are there more issues coming?
No, this is just the one. Like, if they end up liking it, they may do more down the line, but like, I'm only in for this first one. I'm writing the pilot, baby, and setting it free.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Yeah, can you tell people about it? Tell us about it, because how does any of this work?
I got this. They gave me the idea they gave me like some characters that I could use. I really latched onto it because the main character is a black man, and at the end, I get to beat up a literal Nazi. So like, I was already all in for that. No, cool. No spoilers, yeah. But yeah, and this one, the black guy wins. Like, I get to beat up some Nazis. It's really great. So. Most of it was really just being like thinking of ways that I could cathartically build to a large black dude beating the living shit out of a neo-Nazi and writing in all the things that I wanted to write about how much I hate that idea, the idea of fascism and rap and have it couched in superheroes and suits doing fun things.
Okay, this is amazing. Now, you answered one of my questions, because I know that Marvel, like, so they gave you the characters that you could use, right? So you weren't just able to be like, you know, I'm going to...
Come on, give me two, Tawny. Give me two characters, they're gonna
be. I'm going to mix DC and Marvel. I don't know the difference. But I'm like, you can't just be like... Catwoman and Aquaman running through the streets and they start they have a I don't even know what they would do. What would they even do?
Let me take a stab. Tawny means Black Cat and Namor?
Yeah, there you go, Andrew.
All right.
Did I name two DC characters?
Yeah, but it's okay. It's fine.
There's Marvel copycats of everything.
Yeah, we're all good.
Good Lord. Okay. This is like, I failed in college. I failed Greek and Roman history because I couldn't separate all, or the so gods. I mean, like the mythology, I couldn't separate it.
But you've learned so much though in the over quarantine. And like, honestly, the fact that you pulled those out of nowhere is like, I think you deserve a pat on the back. I wouldn't beat myself up about it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really do appreciate it. I did watch Aquaman. I texted you guys about it.
That's right.
You helped me understand what was happening. Okay.
Yeah.
I also want to go back to the part where Zig said 30 pages is a short story.
Well, that's like what's a novella. The ratio of picture to text, though?
You know, we get some cheat days, as they call it. Like, we have things called, you know, splash pages or double spreads, which is just all art with no talking. So, like, that'll whittle some stuff down. But like, you know, a normal comic is like 20 pages and a one shot is usually like just one self-contained unit. So it's like 30 pages, you know, pretty easy, like transit, like a pretty easy one-to-one to like writing for TV, like get your first act, second act, third act, and you can get in and out in hopefully 30 pages. And that's what I was lucky enough to do with the help of my very lovely editor. Because I wrote a lot of talking, and they helped me glue that stuff down.
I love it. And then do you get to choose the artist? Because one of the things I do really like about comic books is they're so beautiful. Like, the colors are so bright. And, I mean, even if I don't, like, understand what's going on, aesthetically, it's very pleasing. And I like the font, that, like, comic book talking font.
Yeah. It's really fun. Like, I didn't get to outright pick, but, like, I said going in that, like, I want to work with black people or people of color. And, like, I've luckily, of the two comics that I've written, they've been with black people or people of color. So like, that's sort of like my, like, I'm like my interview for Earwolf, I yelled about how much I just want to make stuff for brown people. When I got in TV, I said, I want to make stuff for brown people. Like, I'm trying to carry that tradition for comics, and they've been very accommodating. I got this really dope artist named Paco Medina, super, super talented. He's been in the game forever. He's making some incredible pages. And he's fantastic. It's just nice, like, working with people that look like you and like, we're like, have the same thought process. It's just so freeing. And like, I've been very lucky in that, like, of the two story comics that I've written, they've been with black or Latinx people. And it's just been a wonderful, wonderful creative environment to be in.
Oh, congrats. No, that sounds awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it sounds like, with having like the artist be a veteran and, you know, you being kind of fresh to it, I'm sure that was a good pairing. You guys could like, you could bounce stuff off of them.
Yeah, I could make all the mistakes and then they could tell me in the nicest way possible, hey, don't do this. You're making my life too difficult. It was very freeing and very nice.
Does the artist kind of function as like a director on?
Or I've been like, you know, I've been like my one-to-one that I've been thinking of it has been like a director and DP. Like you, like you send makes like sense. Your shot list or whatever. And like, they're like, maybe this isn't the best thing to do. You stick to writing those words.
Yeah. Good. Nice try. My other question truly is actually because I am not a comic book store person, and I will just go out on a limb and say the people that you want to try to motivate who are listening to this are probably also not. And it's also, of course, like COVID on some level.
Yeah,
is this a thing? What do people, do they go to Marvel.com?
Marvel.
Yeah, CodyMarvel.com.
Like actually, how does
Cody's
one?
Marvel.
Because I was like trying to, I was about to be like, just go to
we have no idea.
How does one buy this shit?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really great app called Cosmicology. Like they've been, you can like buy digital comics. Yeah. And that's really been blowing up since COVID because, you know, you can't go to like your local comic shop. So cosmicology.com, like you can go there, you can find it, just type in my name, it'll pop up. It's easy, and like you can download it and read it on like your iPad or your cell phone or your laptop.
Oh, hell yeah.
And it's just great. Like you know, it's great because you can still like support the artist without having to like place yourself potentially in like, you know, a situation where you don't feel safe. Like I just got vaccinated and like I went to the comic book shop for the first time in like almost a year and a half, 2 years, and like even though I was like, everyone was masked up and I felt safe, whatever it was still being.
Yeah.
It was still back in your mind, like, maybe this wasn't the best idea.
Yeah, is this a little stressed out? Okay, so Cosmicology, and because we only call him Producer Zig, the
Comixology?
Cosmicology. Yeah.
Cosmicology?
Ignore my Comixology. Ignore my southern accent.
Comixology.
Okay. Yeah. And the man's name is Cody Ziglar, Ziglar, even though we only call him Producer Zig for like 3 years.
Right. If you type Producer Zig, you guys keep talking. I'm actually going to see what happens if you just search Producer
Zig. I'm so curious to know. I can't imagine that I'm the first hit on that bad boy. But if I am, I'd wouldn't sneeze at it.
Oh, okay. Do you have a fucking Wikipedia page? Why?
Hell,
is this your IMDb?
There's no way I have a Wikipedia page. I refuse to believe that.
The IMDb just says Producer Zig.
your photo literally comes up, I will just say.
Oh, really? Oh, that's funny.
Hell yeah. Producer Zig. So, way to go, man.
Thanks. You know, I'm here because of you guys.
But then there's some dude named Zig Gautier.
We don't know. You've gone too far.
Yeah, no shit. It's not you.
Turn the car around.
Okay, Zig, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but maybe you have a feeling. In terms of writers of comic books, how many are Black people?
Not that many. I say it's definitely gotten better over the past decade, obviously. I was just talking to someone else about this the other day. A really cool thing that I think people may not be noticing unless you're into that stuff is that like you're starting to see more characters like Kamala Khan. She's like a 16-year-old Pakistani girl. Miss Marvel, you got Miles Morales. You got all these characters that are coming through, and that's because a lot of like black and brown people are finally getting into those spaces and being able to write their stories. It's just like, you know, I don't know how you guys do the same thing, but like whenever I get into like a new art form or new medium, like I always look out for like who looks like me, like who else do I know, and like there's a couple of other like black comic book writers that are coming up that alongside me that are like super great that like just been connecting and sort of forming our own little collective. And that's like, you know, you get your first foot in the door and then you meet one brown person, then you meet like another brown person. Like it all is like one domino effect. And it's been really cool, like following all these amazing artists and writers and like just seeing what they're doing. Like there's this one artist I am called Peach Momoko, I think is her name. A credible artist, a really dope Japanese flavoring style to her art. It's like just so nothing you've ever seen before. So unique and so different. And also, it's something that's uniquely them. And that's something that like I've just been really enjoying and just like finding these like black and brown artists that are able to inject part of our culture into like what they're writing or what they're drawing. And like it just stands out from like just the usual fare that you usually see. It's been really nice finding that community.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I found that with like outdoorsy shit, like the, mm-hmm. the few yeah. black women that I know in LA who do it. And there are more. There's actually a whole group called Black Girls Trekking that I've been meaning to join for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I just haven't, like, I've always been working or whatever, yeah. building my house. And so I was far away. But through women like that, like now that I'm up here in Vancouver, I have people connecting me with, like, yeah. there's a girl I'm going to meet as soon as I get out of quarantine. She's going to like take me kayaking, which I haven't done in years because I'm mostly just like I'm mostly a hiking person. But yeah, I'm like, hell yeah, a black woman's going to teach me to kayak? Absolutely, I'm going to go.
and the pressure is just off because, like, you assume that they've come from a similar background, like they know what the deal is. Like, it's not being gatekept by like, there's like my vision of like white hikers is mainly like, you know, crunchy white dudes who like want to like tell you how to like the proper way to hike and all that stuff.
Well, like, now it's becoming like tech bro white dudes, like ultimate gear guys who have like the most ultimate techie gear, and they can just see them coming a mile away, and it's like, they're usually nice, but it is a little like, oh, you feel very intimidated.
Yeah, and like that, the intimidation, like when you're like the first one, only one, or like one of the first few through the door, like you just need to have that community. You're like knowing that you're going to have that like safety net to fall down on, and like being able to find things for like comic books or hiking or whatever that space is. Like, you really, I think you can almost take it for granted if you're not from those cultures or from that point of view, and like, just finding a tribe has been very, very helpful and also fulfilling, because now, like, I'm writing stuff that, like, my little sister, she's 10 years old, like, she likes seeing herself, and she likes seeing characters that have to, like, you know, have their hair washed under the sink, or, like, they have, they wear braids or whatever. It's been nice contributing one small bit that I can to, like, having more black people in some type of media, some type of narrative.
Absolutely. You just triggered me, Zig, when you said hair washed under the sink, because it is wash day for me, and I've been putting it off. I've done like 3 sections since this morning. I'm doing it like I'm waiting an hour in between every section of my hair I deal with, because I have so much hair.
I'm like, I'm just going to ask my mom to do my hair tonight. I'm like, I don't want to. I just don't have the time.
I want my mom to do my hair. I want to be at my mom's house. Okay, well, we should take a break. And then when we come back, we can keep talking about comic books and wash day.
Yeah.
And we back. Andrew, what's wash day for you?
Yeah. You always have luxurious hair, King.
My hair is too long, but I don't know. I'm trying to keep it. I haven't like shampooed it in like months. Mm-hmm. It's not really a thing that I do, I guess.
Doing a co-wash, conditioner wash only?
Mm-hmm. I don't even know what you just said. I do want to go back. Actually, I didn't want to interrupt when we were talking before the commercial break. But the other thing about like kind of being, because I think we all sort of like, I felt it most in the corporate world, but like also like, you know, in parts of comedy and like parts of comic books and hiking, like when you are among the first of, you know, like your race or whatever.
Yeah.
There also is this thing that kind of happens. It's like, you start to like, or not subconsciously, but like there's the danger of like, you then start to like slip into like the like white guy stuff in most cases. It's like, you know, maybe I just like white guy shit. Maybe I have more in common with these people than I, you know, and they start to assume that of you as well. And I think that's sort of like the other like soul eroding thing that like, sometimes you don't even know is happening.
Yeah.
And then it's like,
there's also, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that just triggered me to like, there's also being like, when do I turn it on and when do I turn it off? Like, am I being like the aggro black guy? Like, I've definitely been at places where I was like, I'm like the only black person or one of the few black people to do it. And like, I find myself like having to like crusade for like, you know, the black and brown people, like I'm their voice. Like if I, not to go into specifics, but like you guys know what the stuff that I've had to deal with and like the fights that I've fought to like get representation and people, you know, paid what I think they deserve to be paid. And like, they're definitely like, you know, when you're their first one, they're the only one doing it. Like it's fucking scary telling a screen, like full of a Zoom room full of white people that they're racist and that they're fucking up. And like, wondering if like, man, am I going to have a job tomorrow? Like, am I going to get an email? Like, it's very scary when you're like the only person in that situation.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but then when you don't do it, or when you try to take a more passive approach, sometimes you're like, man, am I a sellout? Man, am I doing the wrong thing? It's just, and it's just that debate that other people don't even have to have. Like, sort of regardless of what you do.
Yeah.
Like, even having to have that debate is, like, fucking unfair.
Yeah.
And Zig, you pointed out, too, on Twitter, like, having, with everything that's happening in the news, too, and then all of your coworkers being like, all right, see you tomorrow morning. And you're like, you have no time to.
It's going to happen at every job, but it always weird. It was always very frustrating when it's like, I got to come into work and like, I have to like perform, whatever that means and where that entails. Like, I have to like be funny. I have to be also productive and like contribute to the, whatever the workspace is, whether it's a writer's room or like a podcast or whatever the thing is. And then like seeing like my white coworkers or like my non-black coworkers be like, well, it's Tuesday, I'll see you guys later. And like, just like turn off and leave. I'm like, fuck. Like I wish that I could like just have that switch and like not give a shit for 24 hours. Just give me that. So I could like perform to what I would think to be the top of my abilities. But you know, it's not a luxury that a lot of people of color can indulge in.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, voicemail time? What do we think?
Thanks for letting me bring everyone down. I appreciate it.
Hey, man. What's the name of the game?
That's what my function is.
Okay, here we go.
Yo, crew. I work at a popular chain restaurant, and I'm an Indonesian American. One day, I did my hair differently. I gelled it back, but then two strands of my hair fell onto my forehead, and one of my coworkers said, hey, you remind me of an anime character. Yo, is this racist?
This was
coming for you, Zig.
Yeah, that seems oddly tailored to me.
This was a weird, I went out of, I don't know, I started thinking about the chain restaurant, and then I realized that had nothing to do with the question. I was like, is it a Cheesecake Factory? Outback Steakhouse?
First off, yeah, that's hella racist. that one's an easy one. Yeah, that's incredibly racist. I mean,
when is it not? Like, if the hair was so specific, maybe a specific color doing a specific thing, and then they named a specific character, then maybe it's not.
Yeah.
You know? No?
So when I was doing, as we've already talked about my hair, but when I was doing a lot of jujitsu, like, because it's sort of mid jujitsu, my hair would be quite big and all over the place often. Mm-hmm. And people love being like, you look like Goku from Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, that's not what I mean. I mean more like, if my hair was your length and it was dyed greenish black and people were like, you look like Sailor Mercury. Sorry, I don't have a lot of anime references. Boom! other than Usagi. Then I'd be like, yeah, I get that. I'm also not Asian, so this isn't a one-to-one. But you know what I mean? Like, if it was more specific, then it's not, because it's like, you look like this specific character.
I think the rule of thumb.
Give grace to this Cheesecake Factory person.
I always think the rule of thumb is like, unless, if you're not incredibly, incredibly close or tight with this person, don't comment on your coworker's appearance, no matter if they look great, if they look bad. Just like, keep it to yourself. Like, if you really need to get it out, you can say it to them like after you guys have clocked out or after y'all have clocked out. Like, you don't need to, like, I don't need someone to tell me that my hair looks great or looks like shit, like while I'm like trying to like cook a bunch of chicken wings or whatever my job is at this restaurant.
Yeah, I think, doesn't Lacey Mosley say she told a makeup artist once, like, don't tell black people who they look like. Like, don't say, you know, you look like my former roommate, and then you get an old picture and you're like,
Yeah, like, you know, we don't need to do that.
So yeah, just keep, don't tell people who or what they look like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost just like, don't talk about people's appearance, I feel like. It feels like pretty strong as far as like a thing to practice, especially at fucking work, especially at a Buffalo Wild Wings, which is where this.
I mean, imagine this dude's got, he's got like his fucking three or four masks on. Like, he's already having to deal with like working at a restaurant during COVID and like getting shit tips probably from some assholes. Now he's got to listen to you wax philosophical about how much he looks like, I don't know, Goku or whatever character.
You need to come up with a new one. Well, I already
said Goku. Come on.
Yeah, you got me. He looks like Naruto. Naruto, that's one. You happy, Andrew?
Is it Naruto blonde?
I'm yeah, not well, happy. Well, this person didn't say what their color is. Like, we can do some. We can paint a picture. They may have blonde hair. Who knows?
You know I'm not happy about this.
Look at you. You look like Princess Mononoke. That's it. That's all I got, guys.
Mm-hmm. You that one's like great.
The lead character in Akira?
Yeah.
Is their name Akira or is that a place?
Yeah, yeah. You're killing okay. it. You should do Gundam to my head. We get her on.
Oh, God.
Akira.
Now he's just trying to remember who's in Akira.
Andrew's pitching. His wheels are spinning.
Yeah. The little slug thing from Nausicaa, Princess of the Wind or whatever the yeah. fuck it's
you
called.
You look like a Spirited Away. There we go.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. Paul F. Tompkins says, just compliment people's like a clothing item, like something that they did that they chose. That's a nice compliment. Yeah. And it doesn't have anything to do with something that's uncontrollable about their person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I always enjoy those more because then it's not a comment on just the items. It's also, I think, a comment on like my taste or like
what
I think makes me up whole is like it's more than just physical. It's like, oh, I like this person's vibe, I'm buying what they're selling.
And yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Right. You look like another anime character that I'm like.
Because it is like that, like, don't judge a book by its cover, but like, covers are designed to be enticing with intention. Yeah. And it's like,
compliment the cover.
Yeah. Compliment the parts that you like about the things they can choose and decide to do.
Yep.
When Andrew gets on the Zoom, we all compliment his quit your day job t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. It worked.
Take a photo, everyone. Oh, Zig, right. So while we're spinning an unnecessary wheel, you and I both bought too many Garfield shirts quarantine.
It was bad.
Oh, my God.
I started getting like checks again from Rick and Morty. I was like, I got to immediately spin this on dumb shit. So I have a Garfield shirt that says Arm the Working Class, which I'm a big fan of. And then I have one, it's him in like a little cowboy hat. And it says, when I get to heaven, I'm worried if they'll let me in because I don't know if they let cowboys in.
It's really wow. I should say Zig and I have multiple matching shirts now.
Yeah, we have a lot of matching shirts.
We have almost a week. I think we could do a twinsie work week.
Yeah, that's just thanks in no small part to the text thread that we share with Jessica Gow, who sends us Garfield shirts, knowing that me and Andrew will take the bait and buy them immediately.
It's like kind of fucked up how simple our brains are, honestly. Like, yeah, I'll buy that.
That's why our friendship works so well.
Oh my God. Oh boy. All right. Can we do the other voicemail? The other voicemail is not as pointed to you, Zig.
Dear Cody Ziegler, I got a call.
Hi. I'm a white man from an immigrant community, and I'm trying to do the work of unpacking some of my inherent racism and biases. And in doing that, I'm realizing how much of my education about Black culture as a child growing up in a predominantly white community came from watching wild 90s daytime talk shows like the Montel Williams Show or the Ricky Lake Show.
Black culture, he said.
They're really terrible. But nevertheless, that was where I got so much of my initial information about Black people and queer people and so much more that really has tainted me. So I'm curious what your recommendations might be for unpacking some of that and flushing it out of my system. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm already picturing him rolling up to a group of Black people like, you know when you guys aren't the father, right? I'm like, yeah, you understand. We get your brother.
You know how it's your culture to go on a daytime talk show and throw a cake that you made at a man who wronged you? This is one that my friend who is probably screaming at his phone about because it starts with one of those back patty caller. I don't know your life. I'm sure you're fine. But it starts with a back patty. Like, here's all the things I'm doing to unpack the blah, 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 buzzwords to make myself appealing to you guys and not seem like a jerk. Great. Fine. But I have a feeling that anyone actually doing that doesn't need to preface their call with all that. But whatever. Anyway, I'm sure you're fine. The next thing, I believe the word you said was most of my information about Black culture came from these shows. Now, if your grown ass now doesn't know that what you saw back then was not our culture, like maybe you misspoke. Fine. Maybe you just meant Black people, which is what you said later. So I would encourage you to reframe this whole fucking thing and say, you know what I learned as a kid? I learned about the types of people that will go onto those shows. That's the only culture you learned about. The ecosystem of the type of person who will accept Ricky Lake's invitation. I went to elementary school with a girl who went on Ricky Lake because her mom and her stepdad were like running a business and she like got them in trouble with the FBI or some shit. Anyway, that little white girl came back to school the next day with a family-sized bag of Cheetos and a new outfit that she said Ricky Lake bought her. That is the type of person that will go on that show. And that's the only thing you're learning about. Yeah. So if you want to unpack yourself now, because this call was wild.
Yeah, I have no much. I don't really have much any more flavoring to add other than, yeah, it's that the word culture is doing a lot of heavy lifting. And I don't know like, necessarily.
I don't know. Like, do you recognize any parts of our culture on those shows? Like,
well, my granddad would always sit me down and tell me how much he would love to throw a chair at someone when, when he was a younger.
Oh, Lord. Man.
I'm thinking about the little black kids who saw their first like goth teens on some of those shows.
Yeah, their first Satan worshiper on.
Yes. Oh my God. Murray. I remember so many of those Maury shows were like, my son is a devil worshiper. And really, he was just like a kid who listened to Korn and like dressed accordingly.
Yeah. He was a little bit too into the Smiths. And like that was their big red flag in their small Wisconsin town.
To be fair, that wound up being a good red flag. If I may, just because you reminded me of it, we didn't talk about it in news, and because I haven't talked shit about Asian people fucking up yet. I forget who it was, and I think this is actually a director who is like, you know, a good director and meant well, obviously, but this dude made like a little like stop AAPI hate video.
Oh, no.
and it's like a good enough message, but they use the Smiths as the soundtrack. And it's like, you know, it would be better to score your Stop AAPI Hate thing with, you know, not music by a man who said Chinese people are animals. You know, I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know. It's just not a choice I personally would have made.
That's wild. Also, why not an Asian artist?
What that was going to be my pitch. Why not just pick an Asian artist?
In the first place. I miss living in a world as someone who used to love the Smiths, and I mean I still do in ways. Yeah. I miss living in a world where we didn't know the inner workings of Morrissey's mind. When we just didn't know.
It was such a bummer.
I'm sure he was always trash. Like, we just never knew.
Yeah, like, oh, the guy that wrote A Charming Man, this charming man can't be a monster inside. It's about like a dude being some old English man, making some love on the side of the road. Yeah, let's do it. Now I find he's a huge racist. He hates anyone that's not a white European.
The guy complete who wrote bummer. Girlfriend in a Coma. There are times when I could have murdered her. I mean, who knew he was a piece of shit?
I did also. God, this is me revealing way too much about my fucking record collection. But I finally found this fucking like I think kind of rare Ariel Pink 7-inch that I own.
Oh sure.
Oh really?
Look, do I either set it on fire or sell it to some Fox News? I kind of missed the window because I think the Fox News people have figured out that his music is also.
I loved that brief moment, though. I don't even know if it probably fell in a gap between our weeks and we couldn't address all the racism in the world. Ariel Pink is a like a indie kind of dream pop adjacent sort of electro artist who was at the Capitol storming. Anyway, so I loved the brief window when all these like fucking tough guy Fox News dudes were like, yeah, we love his music. Like I was picturing them blasting this soft ass shit from their giant trucks with like Confederate flags on the back. And he's singing about like an LA sunset and like.
And freckles. Oh,
God.
I mean, I guess that is the reality. It's like those people never believe in the shit that they are supporting or boycotting.
But they bought a lot of copies of his record. His most recent record skyrocketed after that.
If there's any type of comedy to it all, it is just the ability to just like completely change whatever you're doing to like whatever pisses other people off is kind of funny. But like, yeah, we totally stan Errol Pink. Huge fan. Ugh. Got all their EPs. Like that's just
I got asked funny. A while ago to play in a like kind of 80s-y cover band, play drums, and they were listing off some of the artists they'd cover, and Morrissey was one of them. And I was driving to the like audition essentially, And then kind of they were like, it'll be mostly Morrissey. And I wasn't super familiar with his background. And there's like a great visual. I wish someone took a photo of this, of these guys playing Morrissey and me on the drums reading his Wikipedia. And then I stopped in the middle and was like, I can't do this. I'm sorry. And they were like, why did you say yes to like coming to this? And I was like, I should have done more research, but I have it's to go tough. Home. I'm not going to do this. Yeah.
It's tough. Now you got to research every fucking artist yeah. you're going to cover. Oof.
I mean, to me, I was like, this is what I get for buying records from white artists. Mm-hmm. you don't buy white people's records. This shit yeah. happens a lot less.
Yeah. Yep.
No, then you just get homophobes, unfortunately. We're never safe. No one's safe. Yeah. What was I going to say, though? Oh, just that Ariel Pink falls under that category of music that I generally like as background music, but know that I would fucking hate the person who makes it. I would never yeah. want to spend time with this person.
Yeah.
This fucking rich kid, LA Hills, fucking lo-fi bullshit music maker. But, you know.
You just know you're going to have a miserable experience in the green room when you pass by each other.
Yes. You just know that he's going to tell you that, like, the Mayans invented cell phones or something. And you're like, oh, I can't with this guy.
Well, my problem is I do know a couple of musicians who have, like, played with him before. And none of them were, like, defending mm-hmm. him. But they were just like, he just does a lot of meth. And it was
oh,
like,
sure.
Well, yeah. that ain't. I know
counterpoint.
That's a meth.
There, I'm sure there are plenty of meth heads that
racist.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there's some pretty woke meth heads out there.
Yeah.
I have another friend who knows all those guys, another musician friend, and we got on the phone after this and he was like, basically was like, you know who else is a piece of shit? And like spilled the tea on all these other lo-fi artists. And I was like, cool, cool. Now I'll know. Now I'll know when yeah. they're trending. Why?
Oh boy.
The thought of like Tucker Carlson though being like, the Pitchfork review was really good actually. Like
Yeah, he's listening to all Ariel Pink and then going back and only watching Jay Johnson's Mr. Show sketch is a very funny
yeah.
image.
Yeah. Everybody go through your records, you know, mm-hmm. start preemptively putting some aside if you're worried yeah. about the person who made them.
I mean, I was like, oh my God. Because I kind of was like, I actually was like, when it came out that he was at the Capitol, I was like, I feel like I own one of this motherfuckers. So, and this if he is like, it's like hand numbered to like 1,000 copies or something. Like, I think
got
it's
an
like
early batch,
rare, for real rare.
You better like get Savage. On. Does Parler have a marketplace yet? You better get on.
What's Parler's
sell
eBay?
It for racist? Yeah,
Gab marketplace. Is that a thing?
You better sell it.
Yeah,
I know. I really should have. I think I might set it on fire or something. That'd be fun.
Sure.
That'd be
That's
fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, instead of if you like lo-fi beats and chill vibes, listen to Jay Soam. She's a Filipina artist from LA who is not a Nazi, and her stuff is better than Ariel Pink's, I think, but it's that same vibe. So if you're looking to fill that Ariel Pink sized hole in your collection, if you need music to like chill and wash dishes to while you're a little stoned, Jay Soam.
Mm. Oh, and for the caller, if you want, this is not, I mean, obviously just have some actual black friends is a big step, but also there's so much like read a fucking book by a black person. If like that counterpoint, is a way to like erase your brain.
I was just gonna say, and we were hard on you. I know you're probably not a bad person, but don't ever tell anyone ever again that your first introduction to black people or their culture were those shows. Just let that die here. It happened. Yeah. Let it out. We don't know your name. You're safe. Just never say it again.
Yeah, just choke it down. You'll be better in the end.
Another necessary but not sufficient thing you can read from a black artist is Siege Society issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number one.
Yeah, we cover everything.
It's a one shot.
Next thing, he's going to call and be like, so I read the comic book and now my thoughts about black culture are really confusing.
Yeah.
Do you all have superpowers?
Yeah, what's the deal here?
Oh boy. Okay, I'm gonna buy Zig's comic. This will be the first comic book I've ever bought.
Oh wow. High praise, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited for you.
This will be probably the 50th comic book I've ever bought.
Oh,
Okay, we get it.
No, but that's not a lot. Like that 50 is actually a very weird number because 50 is like doesn't collect comic books.
Because
if you collect comic books, you easily have hundreds. Because they're cheap. They're like a couple bucks a piece. And it's too much for guy that doesn't really like comic books that much.
Yeah.
it's that very dumb sweet spot of like, I bought a couple things.
That's how I feel about like the 15 to 20 records, which seemed to be popular in LA apartments recently, where it's like, I got a record player, so let me get like 15 records. And I'm like, what is this for? What does this do for you? Do you listen to those 15 a lot? Do you listen to one of them and not the rest? I don't get this.
How many of them are Ariel Pink records? Like, any number of
Tell
things.
Us what you get for them if you sell them. Well, that's all I have. Does anyone else have anything else?
Thanks for having me, guys. Always a blast coming back.
Yay for Zig on Twitter. I don't fucking remember the rest of it.
Yay for Zig. All them social media platforms. Dark
all of them?
I'm only on two, and I barely check one of them. I have my notifications set to only get pings from people that I know, so it made Twitter complete night and day. Tony, if you don't do it, I highly recommend it. It'll change your life.
I don't get notifications from shit. I shut down the comments. Every person who comes at me even slightly sideways or just like they've cocked their head a little too far to the left in the comment, I mute. I mute everyone.
You got it thriving. Like Matt Apodaca turned me on to like turning off notifications, and it's great.
I gotta get better at that. I made a joke on Twitter because I went and guested on a podcast, but I was not feeling like so hot that day. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know, just made a joke about how I'm not too sad to be on a podcast. And it was very nice. And I will get back to these.
Yeah.
I will get back to people eventually, but a lot of DMs about like, you want to be on my podcast? And I was like,
not really.
I thought it was going to be DM or just people being like, cheer up. We're sorry. We're sorry you're going through that.
No, hell no. There's people like, come on my podcast then. It's like,
got too many sweet people following me. That's a lesson. If a comedian makes a self-deprecating joke about being sad, the last thing they want is for you to be like, oh, I'm so sorry. They don't want anything. Yeah. They want you to laugh at their joke and like it.
Yeah, give it a like, maybe a retweet, and that's all the in, that's all they need.
But that's on me. I should have shut off replies and shut off DMs.
And now we'll shut off this podcast because we've come to the end.
Damn.
You can call in 323-389-7223. That's 323-389-RACE. You can also call that same number if you want to tell us about a good thing that happened to you. For instance, if Zig wasn't our friend and didn't come on the show, he would maybe call in 323-7223 to tell us about how he's writing his first Marvel comic book. And then we would listen to that voicemail and talk about it on our premium show, Yo Can We Live, which comes out Fridays and is not about racism. It is the antidote to racism for our brains. Suboptimalpods.com is where you sign up for that.
I'm loving this. I'm loving business, Tawny.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. That's it. Podcast.
Bye. This is Suboptimal.